Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
You know, the one thing about the Chicago way is that it's really dark, kind of lonely, and there's no guide. I'm the guide, damn it. Okay. The thing about the Chicago way is that it's dark and lonely, and what you need is, I don't know, some sort of wizened old Yoda type guide with a torch standing on the end of it, telling you how to, you know, negotiate and walk over the holes and worry about the creatures on the side of it that'll devour you if they grab you. And the only way to really proceed along the Chicago way is to know where you've been, see where you've been in order to see the steps you're going to be taking. And Rahm Emanuel and Lori Lightfoot, two ships passing in the day, one going on to, become a pundit on CNN and hang out with his brother and all those Marky Mark Wahlberg types, and the other, Lori Lightfoot, becoming mayor of Chicago, having wanted to become mayor and now actually maybe suffering some buyer's remorse as she's inaugurated. Rahm Emanuel. Let's go there, because everyone's going to be kissing Lori's ring today, or feet, and they're going to be bowing to her and say, this is the light, and she brings the light, and this is wonderful. It's the same type of butt-kissing that journalism always does when a king is coronated. It's the same type of thing. You can think back on, it would be like this in the King's Landing. It would be the same thing. Oh, the wonderful queen, and so forth. It's the same idea. The chattering classes always do this. In ancient times, they used to chatter all the time about the virtues of the emperor, and they do it in Washington. Well, they did it in Washington with the establishment candidates, and we'll do it here with Lori. But think about Rahm, because you won't understand Chicago if you don't realize the things that were missing in the discussions about Rahm. Here are the two that you have to keep in mind. He was brought in on a con game. It was a bait and switch, like a three-card Monte. Find the pea. Find the pea. Put the pea in, and then you have the walnuts and the walnut shells and a fast guy talking to you, and that's what happened. It was a Charlie Rose show. He was chief of staff to Barack Obama. And somewhere between Rahm, unfortunately, having a thunderbolt and discussing his future as if offhandedly, as if it was all by accident, like that sound effect, that he wanted to be mayor of Chicago someday. And that the fix was in. The fix was in immediately. Barack Obama played it. They brought Billy Daly from Chicago to be his chief of staff, and they brought Rahm came back to Chicago and was installed. He wasn't living here. He was living in Washington, but somehow the Board of Elections, you know, they bought that thing about the dress, the wedding dress in the crawl space. And there you have it. Rahm was installed. And then it ended when the city found out that he sat on that Laquan McDonald video. And that boy was shot 16 times, shot to death by a Chicago police officer. Black kid, high on PCP, the white cop, stressed, nervous, and afraid, killed Laquan McDonald. He sat on the video. Everyone, you know this. I mean, I wrote it a million times. He hated me for it. I guess that's why he doesn't show up on the Chicago way. You know, but too bad, Rahm. You're going. You're gone. And Lori Lightfoot, you're coming in. And I wonder, of all the, you know, people that are kissing the hem of her gown today, and I'm not going to be one of them. I supported her big time throughout, but now the time for hem kissing is gone. I still want her to succeed, but kissing the hem of the gown? Plus, she doesn't wear gowns, okay? Here's the deal with Lori. She'll have to find out where the bodies are buried. She needs people who have some political understanding. She needs to hire somebody like Teddy McNamara. He'll kill me for this. from the FBI or somebody like that. People like that, maybe former FBI, retired FBI people, people that can vet political people that want deals. She has to do this to protect herself. And she might want to be direct with the people of Chicago because racial games are going to be played. They've already been played on her. How dare she took a picture, a photograph with Ivanka Trump, and people were making it sound like she was not black anymore. It was ridiculous. The criticism of Lori Lightfoot for sitting with Ivanka Trump is stupid because she's the mayor of Chicago now, and she needs to deal with the president of the United States. And I don't care about their politics. This is the city of Chicago is an important town. Mayor, the president is an important man or woman, depending on who becomes the next president. She has to deal with them on that basis. And she's got to deal with something else, too. There'll be people in the city council who will play the race card on her like Bobby Rush did, like certain columnists have tried to do. And she's got to withstand it. She's got to deal with it directly and with force. Perhaps one way, when Anthony Beale, Alderman Anthony Beale, is opening his mouth about how Lori Lightfoot isn't like all that, and maybe she doesn't understand the community or whatever horse crap he's going to come out of his mouth, she might want to say, hey, Anthony Beale, you're just protecting Carrie Austin, and she's a function of Ed Burke, and everybody in Chicago knows it. Everybody who counts knows it. Everybody who's smart knows it. Carrie Austin Budget Committee is a function, or was for years, a function of Ed Burke. His staffers went back and forth, whispering, the little whispers, the sparrows. We just got to cut the crap and tell people what's really going on. And using race to leverage her when what she's trying to do is clean the city is just nonsense, stupid, and counterproductive. But that's what happens when you don't really understand what you're doing on this road called the Chicago Way. And joining us today to help us understand it, will be Scott Wagspak, my choice, and maybe Lori's too, for chairman of the Finance Committee. And Marianne Ahern of NBC, who had her own run-ins with Rahm and who's been covering Lori Lightfoot on a daily basis. And Jeff Carlin is here, WGN producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. And me, John Cass, husband, father, the Neanderthal living in his diorama where people can see me grabbing, I don't know, chicken out from the fridge because we don't have the drapes and it's driving me crazy, and a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And you know where you are? As power is changing in Chicago, as the old and the new are meeting, as one's going away and the new one's coming in, and the old guard are fighting for their lives, and new ambitious carnivores are coming in that want a piece of the action, you better know where you want to be, because it's the only place to be. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Okay, Jeff, with all the stuff we're, you know, dealing with, Lori, Rahm, Scott Wagspak, Marianne Ahern, and everything, remember the Game of Thrones, don't forget. I think that there's a political story in all the people hating on Thrones because it's over and they don't have a new one to love.
Yeah,
that's what we are. We're like that. We're human beings. Speaking of which, we're losing a beloved creature, Rahm Emanuel, and we're gaining a beloved Khaleesi, Lori Lightfoot, the light bringer. I tweeted that. I don't know. That's too much. What do you make of it? I know we're going to hear other people's thoughts on this, but I need to know your thoughts, too.
I see what Rahm has done for this, to the downtown. I don't want to say the city at large, because it's really, his focus is clearly was downtown and near south and near west, and that plot of land somewhere near Hyde Park that is, you know, being destined for great things. I don't know, but I judge most politicians and most public people on the depth that you have to wade through to get through to them directly, to get their actual opinion on things and their actual take and their response to how the world works. And by that, I mean, how many people do I have to call? How many people's jobs are it to manage that person's image? When you get to someone like a Rahm Emanuel, who's got 30 plus people in a communications team working to massage and make sure nothing about that image goes south and is controlled, that means to me, that tells me that there's a lot of things that are hiding and they want to make sure don't get out there at the wrong time, or they don't, the things they want to work on don't happen the way they don't have control over. And that always makes me suspect. That always leads me to believe that, you know, the means here are, you hope, justifying the end. And it's not, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's the way it should be done.
I heard him talking in one of the butt-kissing interviews that he's done about the wonderful desk he has, owned by, or the desk belonging to Mayor Anton Cermak, who was shot because he fought the outfit or went on the other side of the outfit. The outfit took him out and in front of Franklin Roosevelt, so that was the message they sent. So good choice on your desks, Rahm. It was all about spin and all about image. And when she comes in, as she's in now, she should do what Paul Vallis did when he was at schools. He went to the, years ago, he went into the vast warehouses and found all this junk that was survived. You know, all this fancy junk, like harpsichords and things like the expensive harpsichords, things that they were hoarding in there. And I think she could lay out some of those things when she finds them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Put them out there so people can see how bad things really work. And I just think that she owes it to herself as mayor, moving in on a reform agenda, and the people.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I hope that's the case. We've got this feeling that Lori's coming in on, you know, this with a team where, and this is not to disparage anybody, they're all done a great job, hardworking people who got her to the position where she is now. But there is an underlying idea of naivete almost, you think about, just not necessarily them, you know, not turning a blind eye to anything, but the idea that Chicago is, we're working on 200 years of graft and 200 years of those who can taking those who can't, you know, not taking those who can't, but taking care of themselves versus, and so much corruption in the city, the Chicago way.
She even references it in one in her transition documents.
Exactly. I hope that there is somebody who can lead her away from the potholes, which the city is known for, of corruption. I hope Lori Lightfoot has people around her to point those things out and keep her away from that and protect her, help her do what needs to be done.
One of the troubles when a new administration comes in my limited experience covering this thing for 10,000 years, is that people will criticize the new staff and say they need to have people around them who can, who know the reality, you know, because they want to continue their power. They want to manipulate the staff. They want to manipulate the people around her to get their agenda. That's not what we're talking about here, everybody. We're talking about people who know who the corrupt actors are and who the where the minefields are and what, I'll tell you where the problems could be, waste hauling and asphalt. How you doing?
Yeah.
Okay, you have to be aware of that. And she has to be able to play on the fears of the aldermen with the federal authority, the indictments expected to be coming on Burke and Solis and other aldermen. There's the 11th Ward is being investigated. I don't know if it's not in connection of this thing, but there was a murder of a bank official was killed, or let's see, mysterious death, died in a Bridgeport bank, died in a creditor's, a depositor's home. I mean, there's all sorts of things going on here that's like, it's really amazing. And she needs people around her who can keep her distance, right? Mm-hmm. Well, so she doesn't get, not that she'll get compromised. I don't mean she's unethical.
Right.
But I don't want her honor or her name besmirched because, listen to me, this is John Cass talking about a mayor. Right. Because I want her to succeed.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well, I think one of the white knights, if you will, and I don't mean that in a racial sense, if anybody knows what the white knighting is, that's a different phrasing, but one of those doing the fighting the good fight at City Hall is
the Jedi.
Is probably Scott Wagasbag. So I think if anybody is going to help us, one, gauge what we're coming from, and two, foretell what we're going into, I think it's Scott.
As Lori Lightfoot becomes the mayor of Chicago, and as Rahm Emanuel leaves, as he honors himself and kisses his own behind. And I think there's no better person to have on the Chicago Way podcast talk about all this than Scott Wagasbag, the 32nd Ward Alderman, the leader of the Progressive Caucus and in the council, and a true reformer. And that's where we come to Scott Wagasbag as chairman of the Finance Committee.
Good morning.
So what can we expect from Lori Lightfoot? What do you expect?
Well, I think that, you know, my expectations are that she's going to come in and follow through with a good portion of the mandate that people have asked for. And, you know, it's amazing because it's a mandate that I think we haven't seen in many decades. And it's looking for true reform, really taking down the walls that city council and the fifth floor have put up around taxpayers, or more around themselves, actually. And when you talk about, you know, Rahm's legacy tour here in the city as he goes out the door, you know, people, when I first got elected, people were like, hey, just remember, you know, don't kiss that ring, the boss's ring. And it kind of sounds lately like Rahm's almost taking it to a new level of kissing his own ring, you know, when he's walking out the door.
Don't you have to have double joints in your back?
You need to stretch, I think. I do a lot of stretching for that.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a good stretcher, so.
That's true. So, Scott, I got to ask you, I mean, while we're on the drum, because I want to stay here, we'll go back to Lori, because obviously we've got a lot of prognostication there. But so as somebody who certainly had his share of disagreements with the establishment in general, I mean, anybody, you name it from Daly to Rahm, anybody in that kind of vein, what do you rate? Give me a letter rating here for Rahm and his tenure.
Well, I think you have to split it up. I think overall he probably got, you know, a C. You look at some of the A things that he did, which were funding early childhood development and funding those programs. He tried to work on some of the pension issues. Wasn't always transparent about it, but I know he tried. And, you know, he did crazy things like unilaterally taking away, you know, some of the benefits that retirees had without speaking to them, without having a conversation. And then he had quite a few people who went to prison. And I think that was very telling early on. And I think it led to his demise over time by, you know, continuing to hide things. And I'm talking about Barbara Bird Bennett and Amir Ahmad, you know, people who were hand chosen by him. And I know it's difficult to see through some of those people, but they clearly had an agenda of benefiting from themselves and certain people. And I think that is part of his legacy, is that, yes, he did some good things, but a lot of it was to benefit himself, his future, and maybe friends.
And I want to follow up on that, because there's a rolling idea in my head where there was the Rahm that came in who was bestowed to so many people who he was connected with or associated with or who had the power before him and were helping him usher in this new era. And it felt like, and this is just me from a producer's perspective, it felt like he came in, brought all these names of people who seemingly weren't the best pick, or you could see why they wouldn't have been a pick for certain jobs, like a Barbara Bird Bennett type. And then once a lot of those picks started to, like you said, go to jail or be questioned or have scandals of one way or another, it seemed like Rahm started to kind of pivot and turn and say, okay, well, I'm going to go more for the intellectual thinker types, but then that was seeming almost disingenuous to people he's putting in place. And then you came to the point where it was Rahm, you know, tackling the idea of this Laquan McDonald stuff, which was an entire scandal. Did you see, how do you rate or feel about his transition, or how he kind of changed from the guy who came in versus the guy who's going out?
Well, he put on the old sweater. I mean, that was pretty obvious. You know, and I think I don't mind being critical of him, because when I look at all the things that we were fighting for, that he claimed he was going to come in and change, and he didn't do a restructuring. He talked about restructuring, but he was so tied to the old Daily regime and the people before that, that there was never a chance for reform. There was never a chance to really clean up government as, you know, citizens of this city and the state have been looking for. And you could tell that's what was happening. This whole idea, I think, of you have to be connected to somebody, or, oh, this guy's connected, he's going to get the stuff done in the city that we need done, it is a fallacy. It's always been a fallacy, but people have been duped by it for so long that it's become a way of life here in Chicago. So I think when you look at these people that he brought in, and then his sort of shape-shifting to a different type of person when he was literally at his wit's end in terms of campaigning, and he had to put that sweater on, I think that really exposed how that system is broken, and it always has been. But it really takes kind of tearing down the shades and letting people see what's going on behind the scenes to really prove that people have been right about that need for change for a long time. You know, and then that led us to some, I think it helped because it did expose some things that we're now seeing have to be reformed, have to be changed, not only for our bottom line, but for the good of the city. So I suppose, you know, you can give him A for messing those things up enough that it forced change.
And I would say on that too, I mean, you give him an A for the outward experience or impression he's built for Chicago, because sure, Chicago has, I mean, he definitely raised the profile around the nation, around the world. Do you give him credit, though, for the parking deal stuff? Because I know that was always your pet project, and at least for doing something to try to crack it open, where, you know, obviously the dailies weren't going to do that, and there was questions of whether or not, since he's connected to the dailies, he would even do it. Do you think it was genuine, or how do you rate that? Because I know that's
always
been...
No, I don't think it was... I honestly don't think it was genuine, because when we were talking with Clint Chrisloff, Tom Gagin, about breaking open the parking meter deal, we were serious about saying, let's buy this thing back. It'll cost us money up front, and taxpayers will be pissed about that. But over the next 60 years, we'll actually be making money instead of losing even more. When he broke that thing open, we were begging them to, you know, show us the numbers again, just like Daly refused to. They said, yeah, we're not going to show you the numbers. And I remember having this instance with Steve Patton sitting up there on the dais, and I said, you know, we want to see the numbers before we vote on this. And he said no. And I said, look, you represent the city council, you need to share the information. And he said, no, I represent the mayor, I don't represent you. If you want the numbers, go get your own lawyer. And that sort of said everything to me about, number one, that we were getting a second bad deal. So we ran our own numbers again. My brother and I and some experts sat down, some stats guys ran the numbers, found out that, you know, we felt like we were going to even lose even more money. I think we've proven that again. But second, that, you know, this lack of transparency and the ability for him to hide things behind the city attorney, that is a telling episode that we are going to have discussions about as we move into the Lori Lightfoot administration.
And that's where we are now, as Lori Lightfoot, even as we speak, is being inaugurated and going through that process. What do you expect from her in terms of transparency? Because that seems to be, to me, to be the most important thing.
I think it is. And I think the more people clamor for taking those walls down around City Hall and around the people who've been basically, what I, you know, growing up on a farm, I guess, I call them pigs at a trough, you know, just at the taxpayer's trough. I think that's where we need to see the reforms happen and the transparency, and show us what's really happening behind those closed doors. I don't know all the people that she's hiring You know, we know from this past week that she's hired a couple of women to look into the city finances. They come from more of an independent realm. The city attorney, corporation counsel that she's hiring, hopefully that person is going to be on the open end of transparency. And I get when they have to hold information back, when there's confidentiality issues or, there's investigations going on. Nobody has a problem with that. But there has to be a mandate that is undertaken here. She has that mandate. Aldermen and the city council need to get along with that and realize that we can't keep that wall up any longer. You know, we have a lot of new aldermen coming in that I think are going to be, helpful in some ways to move this issue of transparency. She has to have one-on-one discussions with every alderman and tell each one of them that the old way of doing business in the city council, like you can put up a fight on issues. You can vote no on issues. I don't think anybody has a problem with that. But when it comes to making sure that we're good stewards of the taxpayers' dollar, that there has to be a complete about face in the way that the approach that they've taken over the decades. We were always told, sit back, be quiet, don't ask questions, just do what you're told, kiss the ring. And I never believed in that, and I never followed that. I think aldermen are going to be some aldermen are going to be a little upset that they're asked to follow a new path that taxpayers have been talking about forever.
But that new path requires actual work.
It requires work. It requires sacrifice to do more legislative work, and it also requires sacrifice in terms of giving up the benefits, I think, that people have had for so many decades of, not having to worry about constituencies around the city. And, you look at how many aldermen are under charges or indictment right now, and I think it's 5 that we know of, just in this year alone. And that kind of shows you in what bad shape we're in the city council.
One of the things I think people don't, or maybe want to forget, or Rahm wants us to forget, is that when he really came in with the Charlie Rose interview, it was all a scam. Right? And what happened? How did you take that?
Where he came out and said, boy, I've always wanted to be the mayor of Chicago. Like, my whole life, I really wanted to be that, something like that, right?
And he's always been here.
How long do you think you'll be in this job?
As long as the president wants me to be.
Really? So the president wants you for 4 years or 8 years, you're there.
Well, I was being generous there a minute ago.
Is there any other job in government you'd like to have?
In government?
In government.
Yeah.
What?
Well, I mean, it's no secret.
Did you want to be Speaker of the House?
Well, that's over. Okay. No, I would one day. Now, first of all, let me say it this way. I hope Mayor Daley seeks re-election. I will work and support him if he seeks re-election. But if Mayor Daley doesn't, one day I would like to run for mayor of the city of Chicago. That's always been an aspiration of mine, even when I was in the House of Representatives.
Mayor of Chicago.
Yeah.
What people saw, if you look back at that Charlie Rose episode, it was pretty much set up that he was going to be the next mayor of Chicago, that they were cutting a deal, I think, right, to go from chief of staff to mayor, and then somebody else would move in.
And Obama, the issue is for you, you're the leader of the Progressive Caucus. Barack Obama was president, and he allowed that to happen. It was almost like, is it fair to say that Rahm is dependent on Barack Obama? Obama and the Daleys installed him here.
Yeah, and I don't blame President Obama. I mean, he, from my understanding, he wanted to get him out of the White House. So I guess, people could blame him in part for that, but we were probably better off making sure he wasn't in the White House, from my understanding of stories in the background. But, that was up to him to release him. And voters put him in by a small margin, and then they voted for him again, talking about Rahm. So it seemed to me that, we got to blame ourselves sometimes when we have people like that in if they're not doing what we expect them to do.
And the other bookend to Rahm Emanuel, everyone can talk about all the other stuff he did, but to me, it's Laquan McDonald. He sat on the video. It was cynical. And he put police in jeopardy. He put a lot of people in jeopardy, the city in jeopardy.
He came in on a wedding dress. He went out on a video. That's his memoir, I think.
Nice. How do you assess the whole Laquan McDonald episode and the city council's participation in it?
Well, you know, we were problematic in that as well. We signed off on the $5 million, and I was just talking to somebody who's, you know, doing some background work, hopefully a video or a story on a book on that. And, you know, I look back at the transcripts and I remember not everything is well written in those transcripts, but, you know, I remember asking questions, and I remember Steve Patton, who was the mayor's lawyer, and he was winding his way around that settlement case. And I remember sitting there saying, boy, he's not really taking one tack or another. And as typical, we were sitting there, I think, thinking, okay, what they're telling us is the truth. This is a lawyer who's, you know, sworn to at least work on behalf of the city. Unfortunately, you know, he misled us. I think the staff misled us deliberately. What was really disgusting was when Steve Patton was leaving, he did an exit interview with Fran Spielman, and he said, I know now, like I knew then, that it was murder. And when I saw that, I thought, you never said that word. You never led us to believe that it was anything like that. And, you know, how could you come back now, a year plus later, when you're leaving Rahm Emanuel's office and tell people that? So they really did a good job of hiding everything. It got Rahm through the election. And yes, I think that was probably his downfall, but it was the downfall of the city too, for believing in a guy that you know, was supposed to be working on behalf of citizens and taxpayers, and instead was working, you know, to save his own legacy.
But it did lead to Lori Lightfoot in some respect. I mean, in a great respect, I think. To me, either Lori Lightfoot or Paul Vallis would have destroyed whoever the opposition, you know, the establishment.
The machine put candidates.
Up. Right, because
yeah, establishment.
I think people are fed up with it. But here's our worry about Lori. And you know I like her. And you know I supported her in the column and in the podcast, and so did Jeff. But here's the deal. I heard a story that some asphalt guys were going to raise some money for her. And I asked around. I said, do you guys know who Mike Tatum is? And they looked at me as if I was speaking a foreign language, or that I was kind of asking them to make their beds or something. They were like, what? And I thought, okay, Lori Lightfoot needs people around her. She's got Scott Walksback. She has Joe Ferguson. But she needs other people around her who know where the bodies are buried. And that concerns me. What do you make of that? I mean, I really, her staff, I'm not critical of their staff. They're young people. They're believers. I've long since not been a believer in anything except God and my family. But they're believers, but they don't have the people they need to say where the bodies are buried and who she should stay away from and who she should kind of be careful of.
Yeah, I think what maybe they need is just a chart or some kind of spreadsheet that anybody that's looking to apply for a job or a contract, you know, a red flag goes up when those people's names pop up. I certainly don't know all those people. I've always tried to keep, you know, arm's length or 10-foot pole between myself and a lot of those bad dealings. You know, we have to vote on a lot of contracts, but we don't always know who's really behind those deals. And it would be helpful if there were people that were telling her staff, informing them when somebody pops up, like, look, this person has a red flag. They showed up under the, was it the Sorich clout list?
Mike Tatum, he showed up on everything. He showed up in the golf cart with Rich Daley at the Department of Transportation golf outing, and everybody in the city knew, okay, he's riding with the mayor, so he's the guy, and leave him alone.
Yep.
And that's I'm not saying that he's not been charged with anything. I'm not saying he did anything illegal. I'm just saying that it was fodder for many stories in the Chicago Tribune and many columns of mine. And as a result, I don't think Lori Lightfoot can risk having herself associated with those ways, with the Chicago Way.
She needs a Chicago Way consultant. That's for sure.
that's a great idea. I'm talking to somebody right now.
Oh, he's taken. He's taken by the people.
But maybe like...
How about his assistant? Yeah,
Jeff Carlin. Or how about, like, here's one. Okay, weird, but...
Weren't you a goalkeeper?
That's right.
He's such a soccer fan. Keeper. But, someone in the news business who knows. Marianne Ahern, yeah. Franz Spielman, Dan Michalopoulos. They just, I'm sure they're not going to be happy that I mentioned their names, and I don't mean it with anything but respect. But people that know, you got to have people that know who put the connections together like that. Those horrid little maps in the mind of that paranoiac on Homeland. What's her name? Carrie. You have those strings going from picture to picture. I don't know,
well,
Scott. I think she does.
I think if the media is doing their homework, which they always have. I mean, I think back to Dan the Greek and the Dan Michalopoulos on the Neighborhoods for Sale story with Lynn Becker. I mean, that was a pivotal moment for my ward where it exposed a lot of the things that were going on in the zoning committee, from the lawyers, the bankers, the realtors to council members. And it was from that I learned really how that whole zoning process was going and where the money was and how to change it. And we did change it. We put our markers down when I got in office and we said, hey, we're changing the system. Here's the new system that you're all going to abide by, one of transparency, openness, working with the community. And we still build things. We still move zoning changes. We still get things done, but in a much better way. And I think, that's a model that she can use, but it was helpful to have great reporting, because I think they won the Lizagor Award for that.
And he's one of the finest reporters in the city.
Dan. Yeah, and it really exposed, I think, to the citizens, like what was going on behind the scenes and how many millions of dollars were being made on the side. And it helped me just transform my ward right when I walked in the door. And so I think it's helpful to have the media doing the investigations, looking up these things. And I think it behooves her, the mayor, to really keep an eye on those things and understand who the players are. But I think she'll have people, helping out in that way, the Chicago Way advisor.
I hope so. I would recommend another Ted McNamara or some of the FBI guys to come and work for her.
Well, I think they're doing their job right now, too, if you look at, the tip of the iceberg with Ed Burke's charges.
They're very busy.
What do you see? How does that, Dan Happy Endings, Solis, and Ed Burke, the spider.
Ed Burger King Burke.
Spider in the web. Both are in trouble. They both have federal heat. But so will other aldermen, as we're told, Alderman Walks Back. And as a result, as Lori Lightfoot begins to reorganize the city council, or at least put some allies in place, the impending indictments of others impact the political process there?
Well, she clearly won't know what's going to happen. I mean, I don't think any of us do. We have to look at the way the council has been run. We have to look at, Ed Burke. There were a handful of us who were pushing back against the security detail for many years. That was cut. It took pressure to do that. The workers' comp program, which has been now fully audited, and that should be coming out any day now, that's going to turn out to be, I would say, poorly run for a conservative estimate. A lot of insider stuff going on there. But those are things that aldermen should have been pushing back and fighting against for decades, and we just haven't seen that. So she's going to have to look to people to, again, sacrifice their personal benefit, sacrifice the way of life that they have had by just voting for a mayor who was not doing the right thing, and start looking at things differently. And I think she's going to have a tough time. You appoint people to positions. You hope that they follow through. You hope that we're going to do a lot more legislative work, more reading of documents. But that's something that people are going to have to relearn in some cases. I don't know how she can predict, you know, who's going to be best or not. But I think she has to look back at a little bit of history as well to see who's going to work on behalf of taxpayers like she has to.
All right, Scott, last question I got to ask you. So you talk about sacrifice, and this is one thing I always love to bring up, to just throw out there, because I don't think enough people really wrap their head around this. But aldermen make six figures plus. I mean, they're well compensated for your time to run our governance, and it's no small task. But the idea that you keep bringing up and mentioning, and it rings in my ears, is the idea of sacrifice. I mean, there are a lot of aldermen, like, the sacrifice doesn't come to mind when I think about them working for the city and making the city a better place. That has been shown recently, or just you know, in the memos that put out by Lightfoot about adjusting the aldermanic privilege. And I got to get your take on that. And this idea of sacrifice, it almost runs counterintuitive, because I know lots of people who would like six figures to do a tough job. What's your reaction to what's happened so far?
Well, number one, I think she's looking at, you have to do this job full time. If you're not doing it full time, you're working another gig full time and taking this paycheck, that's wrong. It's unethical too. If you're working against the city, like Ed Burke was, where he was, you know, reducing people's taxes, property owners' taxes, to the detriment of everybody else, that's wrong. So number one is do your job. A lot of people haven't been doing that or double dipping. I think she wants us to look at aldermanic prerogative in the zoning sense, but that's going to require having a real zoning process. More proactive one that meets the needs of the city, and that we have to study first and bring people in who are going to change that. So I don't think she's looking at aldermanic prerogative for the zoning aspect right off the bat, even though that has to change. She's looking at the stuff that Ed Burke did, where, you know, the feds got him basically holding court over a business by holding up essentially a permit for them to move forward on a driveway. That is in the executive side, and that's where the executive needs to do their job as well. So we're talking about the city departments, not just the aldermen, where they've acquiesced for decades to aldermen who were more strong or heavy-handed and saying, you're going to do what I tell you to do, not vice versa. Not what's good for urban planning or good engineering practices, but what's best for me and my ability to get donations. That's where she's going to go after it. You know, if some of us are in positions of power where we can utilize it for the good, a la finance committee, we have to go through and revamp all these different committees and, you know, really focus on doing what's right instead of allowing people to use it for their personal benefit. And I'm probably using the wrong word, sacrifice. But what I'm telling the new people coming in is you have to sacrifice this idea that you get to benefit personally from taxpayers' largesse. That's what I mean by that. Stop coming into office. Stop having a second job. Stop working against citizens and taxpayers for your own benefit. And that's more of what I mean.
Those are revolutionary words. Dangerous words.
I think they're pretty simple.
Dangerous words from a dangerous fellow. Scott Wagspeck. If Lori Lightfoot wants to have her reform agenda, she will make sure that you're the chairman of the Committee on Finance. And whether you and I agree on a lot of things, we do agree on the fact that the people of Chicago need the complete attention of its public servants. Thanks a lot for being here, Scott.
Thank you, John. So I appreciate it.
Good luck.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Now joining us on this day of transition and inauguration is Marianne Ahern, political reporter for NBC5 in Chicago. Marianne, hey.
Hey, I am honored to be here. Thank you for asking me.
So, I guess at one news conference Lori Lightfoot gave before her inauguration, she mentioned the Chicago Way. Is that true?
It is part of the transition report. How about that, John? Yeah. Now, here's the issue. She can mention it in her report, but does she understand what the Chicago Way is?
I think some of it she does, but I am a little concerned, and I'll tell you why. I'll give her a pass on the laydown on Lincoln Yards, because she built that up like she was going to fight it, And then she let it go because I guess she didn't want to, Jeff, I don't think she wanted to anger the Crown family on her first, you know, her first, even before she was sworn in. So that's gone. She didn't fight it. She let it go. But if she doesn't put Scott Walks back, what signal does that tell you?
There's a problem inside the city council that they're not going to approve him. She needs 26 votes. And right. if she's not going to appoint him and lose, that wouldn't look right. Although she's also clearly made him a promise that you're the guy, you're the one I want. If she doesn't get what she wants, it says she's going to hit a rough road week one.
One of the things that got me in trouble with mayors and the same thing that got you in trouble with mayors, Mary Ann Ahern, is our habit of trying to tell people what's really going on, not just what they say is going on. So when I see an Anthony Beal, alderman of the 9th Ward, complaining about Scott Wagsback not being a nice guy, why do I think there's puppet strings between him and Ed Burke? I always think that with when Anthony Beal's taught, when I hear these people piping up like this, chap, 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 jabber, 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 I'm thinking Ed Burke's got to be pulling strings somewhere.
Well, and that's the way it's always been. It has been the Chicago way. I also think that Wagaspak is sort of one of those loners. He's the guy that did speak out against the parking meter deal. He is the one that no one can really, the mayors in the past can't count on. Folks like voters like that. We like that. Voters like that. They can't count on where he's going to be.
He can count on the fact that he's not going to do the wrong thing. That's what you can.
But the other aldermen, they want, you know, I'll give you this, you give me that. Let's make a deal. Da da da. He's not a deal maker. He's the guy that sits and reads the fine print. He's the one that says, "Wait a second, this isn't what we promised."
Wait, Abu Dhabi? We're sending the money to the parking meters to Abu Dhabi. Something that, Tom Tunney, he loved the parking meter deal. See, and I know that Mary Ann Ahern would remind her viewers of this. And if Tom Tunney were chairman or something, or Lori wanted to put him in, she would be like, "Mary Ann, why did you do that?" Right?
You know, the Mayor Emanuel, just even the way he would say my name sometimes, it was just like,
we got to get
Mary Ann. You know, he was what, just
bring us back to the bullying part. I mean, like, you're one of the nicest people I know in news. Jeff and Chen, yeah. Rahm Emanuel is trying to beat her up. What happened? Take us back to that day, like in the Wayback Machine, Mr. Peabody. What happened?
You know, there were a couple of incidents. I think he thought it was going to be Washington, D.C., where at the White House, you wait for your name to be called. You wait for it to be your day. It's not always my day. We didn't know that they even did that until we saw the transition of Barack Obama when he announced his various secretaries. And Carol Marine and I were there. We're like raising our hand going, "Yeah, bro." And they're like staring at us. No one raises their hand. No one shouts a question. Hold on. It's not your day.
It's the White House. We might have to sing and dance for these people.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then literally, when it finally was my day during the Obama transition, I got a text on my phone 30 seconds before. "All right, you're up next." I said, who's giving me that? You know, like, what's going on here?
Or they're managing who's going to take the questions.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I think
we don't do that here.
No. We just ask the questions,
right.
You know?
Right.
And you try to just sit there some days and, you know, you don't have to have, like, the most profound question. It's usually like, what are you talking about? Really? Why'd you do this?
Clarify?
Yeah.
Something.
What'd you mean?
Yeah. You know, when you don't ask that and you walk out and later you sit there and you think, dang, it was so obvious. Right. Why didn't I just say, like, what really are you up to? Because what we all just watched here, this dog and pony show, that wasn't what was going on. There was something else going on. But anyway, so Emanuel, of course, thought it was going to be like that, and it wasn't. And we tried to get answers out of him, and he wouldn't stop. He'd take two or three questions and would run out the back door. And so I followed him one day and shouted questions down the hall, and of course they didn't like it. Then they asked me, it was my turn for the big one-on-one in his office, and they told me that the issue would be immigration. And
they said, told you what the issue?
Yeah, he wants to talk to you about immigration. Come on over. And I said, well, I'm not going to talk to him about it. Well, you've got to ask at least a question on immigration. I said, I'll ask one, but I've got other questions.
Right.
So we did one on immigration. We did one on, it was the pending CTU strike. And that led right into, well, Mr. Mayor, where are your kids going to school? And I hear that they're going to go to the University of Chicago. And that's when he took the mic off. He stood up. I stood up. You know, and of course, I'm tall. He's not. You know, he like came up to my nose. You know, and he starts pointing his finger and screaming at me. I had mistakenly turned to the photographer behind me and said, "Oh, you know, don't worry. It's going to be fine. We don't have to shoot this." Well, dang, I wish I had gotten that on tape.
Yeah. Oh, he should have. The photographer, give me his name. I'll talk to this man.
I had two interns with me that day. And the two of them, college interns, their eyes were as big as could be. We walked out. He leaves the room. Tara Cooper at the time was his press gal. She's like, I was trying to apologize. I looked at her. I said, that was really crazy. That was really crazy. I've had a lot of things happen, but I've never had a public official stand an inch from my face, point his finger at me, and scream at me. And the two interns, as we're walking to the elevator, they say, I think I'm going to go into PR. I don't think I'm going to do news.
It was pretty funny. But that was outstandingly dumb of him.
Well, and he had done it to Karen Lewis like a couple of weeks before.
Was that FU, famous FU, Karen? Yeah. And she loved that because she used it against him. And so you would do that whole like beautiful smile that you have and look at Ramen smile, and everyone knows the backstory, right?
Right. You know, now he's, you know, we leave as frenemies. You know, he's of course is much calmer these days, not that he's not gonna be there.
He's crying, I heard. He was crying the other day when he was leaving before talking about how much he loved it and everything.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know what? I don't smoke cigarettes, but if I did, when you started crying, I would have rolled over and had one.
Marianne, speak to that. I mean, the idea of the ROM in versus the ROM out. The guy who came in on like a power trip into the city versus the guy who's leaving on a soft sweater, if you will.
Oh yeah. The fuzzy sweater really fits now, at least in the last month. You know, now looking back, here we thought he was the guy with all the answers. Everyone was so nervous about, oh my gosh, we're not going to have a daily? You know, what's going to happen to the city? And when I say everyone, a lot of Chicagoans were nervous about that. I don't think the press was. I don't think, you know, the aldermen were. But there was this sort of, oh gosh, you know, is the city going to fall apart? What are we going to do? And so Rahm to the rescue. Rahm leaves the White House. He's got all the answers. He's going to do it all. We want to get tough mayor. We don't want any mamby-pamby mayor. You know, come on, Rahm. And I think Rahm didn't know what the hell he was doing either. Just like anybody, you know, like, oh my God, now what did I get myself into? And so some of that brusque, you know, I'm only taking three questions and I'm out the door. He didn't have the answers and he didn't want to say, I don't know. And so that's why there was this crazy relationship in the beginning of just being a jerk to us because he didn't know what else. That was just, that's him. I mean, he'll admit it. He's a bit of a jerk, you know? So now 8 years in, now he's run the city. Now he's, you know, harassed everybody in town from, you know, who knows, the police superintendent on down to every alderman and the staffers, that he realizes, okay, you know, This was quite a job, but man, I loved it. It was cool. I had some pretty good power. I got to call people up and things happened. And so on his way out, yes, it's the melancholy ROM. It's the, wait a minute, I'm not done with public service. I might be back. You know, let's see what happens.
Citizen first ROM now, you know, family of citizens, family of people, not the power wing slinging ROM Emanuel. And that's interesting. And I always have this kind of theory about when I deal with public people, you know, when I'm a producer reaching out and trying to get to somebody. And I always talk about how Rahm is a phalanx of PR people that protect him. And he's so insulated from, you know, general media. I'm talking national, talking radio, TV. But there was always a Marianne Ahern or even a Ben Bradley or somebody chasing Rahm down and trying to nail him on stuff that would then become spiraling. How do you see that as someone, you know, gauging the PR in front of them, between that line between you and them, trying to get a real answer out of it?
Yeah, and you know, he had some communications folks for a while that were very difficult to deal with, you know. And you got to think they got that message from him, You know, they were calling back on, you would do a story that they didn't like. What do you, what's up? Why would you do this? How come? You know, constant harassing that I didn't come to do their PR for the day. I would every day have to say, they were the masters of PR. They would put out a press release overnight knowing that the early morning news, especially at TV stations, are pretty slim staffed. Nah. And so they get a press release at 2 or, you know, midnight or 2 a.m. that says the mayor is going to announce this today. Wow, we're going to, you know, we're going to have a brand new shiny object down on 75th Street. And they didn't know, or are, you know, and I'm not blaming them because they're in a rush. They got to hurry up. They've got 3 hours of news to put on. And so they would take that press release and it became a story on the air with no questions asked. Mm-hmm. What about what shiny object? Wait a minute. Didn't we already have the ribbon cutting on that like 8 months ago? Is this the third ribbon cutting that we're going
or
to
the
on this?
Fifth, how about the fifth one, like at Fifth Third?
Yeah,
like Rocky Wirtz told us the other day.
Now MB.
Yeah. I mean, I went to Method Soap about 10 times. And it's a great, great project on the south side. But, you know, I mean, you know, we dug the hole. We put in the first post, you know. Then we And that became because he's up early, of course, you know, exercising at these
swimming
bank clubs.
In the lake.
And he sees all those TV cameras and TV monitors up and sees the early morning news doing the pro-ROM story right away, 4 a.m., 4:30 a.m., 5, 6. Oh, the mayor's got this today. Here, the mayor's off and doing And I would have to every morning say, guys, this is not gospel. We are not the, you know, the ROM news readers here today. You've got to ask a couple of questions. You know, there, if he's putting out these press releases at midnight for you to read, someone's got to be available for you to at least question and say, wait, what's new about this? Really? Is there something new here? And why are we covering it?
But there's nobody to question, just the release. He knows that. And, young reporters who are out there, they don't want to be the news editor or anchor says, why don't we have that in Channel 2 or Channel 5 has this or Channel 7? Why don't we have this, right?
And that just starts the propaganda machine.
Manipulator.
He doesn't have a law degree. He has a master's in communication. And Northwestern should endow a chair for ROM because no one has controlled the message better than that guy. Really, he's been pretty darn amazing to get to Laquan. Yeah.
Well, that let's talk about this because if you put a parenthesis around ROM, the beginning is how do I put this delicately? Seconds after he passed gas on the Charlie Rose show, he announced his he wants to be mayor, and that was the fix was in the peas. It was like the three-card Monte, where's the Black Queen, and he's made mayor. Billy Daly goes to Washington. It all works out until Valerie Jarrett decides otherwise. And then all the way to Laquan McDonald. That's how I see him. Mm-hmm. Always PR, all spin. From the Charlie Rose show, there was really no election. It was like an installation.
It was. It was a coronation. Yeah,
right.
It was
because you had Barack's imprimatur there and right. It was all done.
Yes, all done. Well, even Obama even came and did the Pullman Museum, National Museum. Mm-hmm. You know, weeks before the election, it was so obvious. You know, and so folks on the South Side thought, well, this is Obama's choice. We're going to go with him.
Right. And then we come to the Laquan McDonald video, and he sat on it. And I don't think Chicago forgave him, and he figured that out, and he couldn't run for re-election because of that.
He keeps saying no, but everyone else behind the scenes says yes, that he saw the polls. He wouldn't have Lori Lightfoot would have won no matter what. She would have beat she would have beat Daly, and I think she would have beat Rom.
And she never would contend with that. And so, I mean, she would have walked away with it almost. I mean, she clearly did, obviously, over Tony, but she wouldn't have had, there wouldn't have been this idea where it's 2 or 3 weeks out and, you know, Lori's polling at maybe fifth place. And people are like, oh, you know, it's going to be Daly. It's going to be a Daly. And now, in reality, people wanted this and it was the timing for it. But I mean,
it's not only her, if it were Vallis, and I'm still not giving up on Vallis, because I don't give up on the people of Chicago. Vallis or Lightfoot represented change to me. If they were, either one were opposing Daley or Preckwinkle or those old guard, Chico, even right. Susana Mendoza, no matter how much Rahm and certain investors of certain newspapers wanted it to be that way, mm-hmm. It would be the same thing. Overwhelming, the people would have tossed them out.
And this is a guy who really was behind the scenes for so long, running the DCCC, being the chief of staff. So this is a guy who really does know the numbers and does get it. But mm-hmm. then when he was the guy's name on the ballot, I think it was hard for him to accept that when his advisors, others were saying, Ron, this isn't going to happen. This isn't going to go the way you want. You're going to get in a runoff, and it's not for sure you're going to win. And he wanted the sure thing. He wasn't going to go down, you know, in an embarrassing way.
The oligarchs didn't put him in so that he could turn it over to somebody they didn't know.
You got it.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I mean, I've got to look forward now. I mean, we've got to look forward to, you know, Lori's coming in as the shining the light and the reformer and, you know, fixing the Chicago way. Not fixing, you know, how you doing, but fixing the Chicago way. But where does she leave when it's all said and done? Do you think she is insular from all the stuff that Rahm, like Rahm coming in on a wave and goes out on a whimper? What's the story for her, do you think? Obviously, we're looking forward.
There's some chaos going on in this transition, and I think there's always chaos, no matter what.
Right.
And I'm sure there was chaos from Daley to Emanuel. This one's a little more apparent to us because these are some newbies when it comes to just press relations, when it comes to some of the obvious running the trains on time kind of thing. And so we're all a little bit, the reporter sides are going, what's going on here? You're all getting back to us quite, you know, as fast as we want and are used to. So maybe throwing everybody out is not always such a great thing. You know, we need a couple people who know how the Chicago way does work.
It's the problem, I think, Marianne, and I'll tell you a story. And tell you too. I told you already. I told the podcast listeners. A few weeks ago, I heard a story that Mikey Tatum, who with Tony Pacciullo and Rich Daley's approval, paved every street and alley in the city of Chicago and is worth I don't know how many billions. And his buddy Freddie Barbara from Allied. And they're all like knock-around guys who have made a lot of money. And I hear that Mikey wants to get back into the asphalt business. His son is in it. And I just asked. I hear Mike Tatum might have had a fundraiser. And they responded to me like, Mike Tatum. And I thought, literally, I was talking to one of my nieces when they were 15. And I don't mean it's a sexist way, okay? Because there's men and women.
Right.
The thing is, it's clear to me that she does not have people around her who know who's who and what's what in politics. Like, when Rich Daley came in and we were kids, there were Ed Bedore, Kaiser Sose, known as Jeremiah Joyce, Tim Degnan, and the guy who would sell the rat's orifice to a blind man for a wedding ring, Frank Cruzzi himself. And they were all around Rich Daley and would not let, you know what I mean? They were protecting him from his impulses. I don't see, and they knew where the bodies were buried. Where are these people around Lori?
I know. It's worrisome. I you know, you got to have some folks who know who the players are. Who to talk to, who not to talk to, when to respond to the phone call. And she's not up to speed on that yet. And she's not even, you know, how many days is she, you know, like she's barely there. It's a learning curve. I don't want it to turn out like Rauner, you know, that
I want her to succeed. I want her to succeed.
Exactly.
But I have to confess to you, I did publicly put your name out there as a person. I said, you, Dan Michalopoulos, Fran Spielman, somebody should, I didn't offer myself because I love what I'm doing. She should hire somebody like this who know who the players are, who know, oh, you want to go to have lunch with Fred Barbara or Mike Marchese? Well, let me tell you, sit down, let's talk. You know, not that there's anything wrong with lunch.
You know, Daly even had Jackie Hurd. Jackie Hurd had been a reporter for the trip.
She's the one who called Jeremiah Joyce Kaiser Sosa. We were partners at City Hall then.
Yeah. You know, you need a wrangler who knows what we're up to and what we're looking for and why we're looking for it. And I don't see that yet.
Thanks a lot, Marianne. I guess we're going to have to see who she's with and how she walks on this thing.
It's going to be a wild ride.
You can have your old guard. You can have your new guard. You can say it's a new day. You could say the old days are gone and the new days are here. And I've only heard that for about 10,000 years. Okay? So keep your skepticism, but hope that they do well. I'm not going to be a cheerleader, but I'm going to be skeptical. But I also hope she does well, because if she does well, the city will do well. And that's the point, right? For Jeff Carlin, WGN producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. For Marianne Ahern, ace reporter of WMAQ NBC here in Chicago. For Scott Wagspak, alderman of the 32nd Ward, leader of the Reform and Progressive Coalition in the City Council, and the man who should, by all rights, be finance chairman. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune, a man who lives in his diorama without drapes like a caveman at the Field Museum. Thanks for joining us, and I hope you're back for another edition of the Chicago Way.